Let There Be Light. From Flashbangs and Frag Grenades. By Calchexis. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on League of Legends by Riot Games. Chapter 16. Promise.
Where to, Miss Arctura?
Home, please.
Seraphine replied as she relaxed into the back seats of the cab while Chuck nodded and started the engine. A labyrinthine set of service tunnels connected the interior of Billowa to several other wards in Zaun, although until recently they had gone nearly unused due to a lack of any reliable maps. All of that had changed when Jinx had begun providing snippets of accurate map data. Never the whole thing, but it was enough to make movement through Zaun many times more efficient than it had been. It was also the only reason that Renata had relented on Seraphine's visit. The maps that Piltover possessed were even more out of date than the Chembaron's copies. So far, only Jinx seemed to have had the time and manic obsession necessary to keep her maps of the city's psychotic architectural layout relatively up to date. Even with the relative safety of the tunnels, Renata had flat out refused for her to go with anything less than 3 Glasgari security guards, plus her chief of security. Fortunately, Seraphine happened to like Rana, so it could certainly be worse.
How was she?
Chuck asked over his shoulder.
Still asleep? Seraphine replied.
And Lux?
Seraphine wasn't wholly certain how to answer that. Lux was a variety of things, not all of which had descriptions or indeed diagnoses. She eventually settled on,
"She's keeping."
He nodded, seemingly mollified, and went back to driving, for which Seraphine was grateful. Her conversation with Lux had left her with a great many things to think about, none of which were particularly comforting. Her feelings for Renata were complicated, to say the least, and her solution prior to Lux confronting her, albeit unintentionally, over them had been to studiously ignore their existence, which had admittedly been getting more and more difficult over the past month and change. Part of it was that due to Renata clearly making an effort not to be so heinous a bitch as she usually was, which Seraphine appreciated, but another part was simply growing familiarity. Having spent the last several months in Renata's company day in and day out, it was inevitable that they would either develop some kind of rapport or else one of them would certainly have killed the other. In the end, Renata had proven to be harsh but surprisingly reasonable, regularly going out of her way to ensure that Seraphine was comfortable and even happy. The point was that Renata was trying, and it was more than Seraphine had expected when she had signed the contract. Day in and day out, week by week, Renata had shown, in her own abrasive way, that she was trying to make the life that Seraphine had found herself locked into as appealing and as comfortable as possible when she had no reason to. More than that, she had started becoming more open, more willing to talk about personal matters and even, aspects forbid, her feelings. Underneath all of that cruelty and corporate bluster, Seraphine had discovered a very badly wounded woman who was literally too angry to die. Someone who had possibly once been kind and might even have had a good heart before Piltover had destroyed it over and over again. It had gotten almost impossible to judge Renata for her cruelty after understanding where she had come from. Even more so after seeing more and more of Zaun and what Piltover had really done to the place. Renata was no different from almost anyone else in the Fishers, really. She was just marginally more financially successful. Rather than judge, Seraphine had tried instead to soften the edge that Piltover had inadvertently sharpened. She pushed for Renata to relax some of her crueler policies in her mines, provide better rebreathers and equipment, and even close some of the more toxic and least profitable tunnels. Her initiatives had met, at first, with flat denial, but Seraphine had refused to give up. She'd talked to Echo about providing better breathing supplies at cut rates from the smaller wards that trusted the Firelights but not the Chembarons, and it was that grassroots campaign of provisioning that had convinced Renata to eventually relent, first on supplies, then on other matters as well. Bit by bit, Seraphine had uncovered someone who had no taste nor love for cruelty, but had grown up so used to it that she simply accepted it as a matter of course, even if there were other options. That realization had been heartbreaking, the idea that underneath all that pain was someone who was willing to do good if the world would have just allowed her to. if Piltover had just allowed her to. And somewhere in the middle of all of that, Seraphine had begun to develop intense feelings for Renata, first of pity, then sympathy, then a smidgen of admiration, neatly balanced by the occasional desire to punch her. Complicated, it didn't even begin to describe her full feelings on Renata Glask. But at the end of the day, in the middle of all of that chaos, Seraphine couldn't deny the truth. She was, at least a little bit, in love. Renata was ambitious, determined, and absolutely resolute. She gave no quarter and expected none in return, was fiercely intelligent, and had a completely unshakable conviction. She made no excuses for her actions either. She didn't bother with the civil lies of the greater good. Renata fully understood what she was doing and accepted the responsibility and consequence of doing it. There were certainly worse qualities in a person to be attracted to, but if Seraphine was being honest with herself, there were also better ones. She also had to admit that there was no accounting for taste. The fact that she found Renata to be physically intensely attractive certainly didn't help matters, of course, but that was beside the point.
"Maybe I just have bad taste in women," Seraphine mumbled as she leaned her head against the window.
Acid rain fell in a drizzle as they passed out of the tunnels and onto the streets of Glasgowry Ward. The towering base of the spire that carved up from Zaun to pierce the golden skies of Piltover came into view soon enough, and Chuck parked the cab in the lower levels close to the elevator. Per protocol, Seraphine waited for Rana and her goons to declare the area clear before stepping out and allowing herself to be escorted in formation to the elevator doors. Renata didn't have to let her out, threats or no, and there was no reason to be obtuse about the security measures that she had demanded be followed. There had already been a couple of assassination attempts, after all, and paranoia was only really paranoia if they weren't actually out to get you. If they were, then it was just called prudence.
"Have a good rest of your day, miss," Chuck said with a wave as Seraphine stepped into the elevator, flanked by two meaty Glasgowry goons, and Seraphine waved back.
She rode the elevator to the main residency floor, and the whole way up she mulled over what her next step would be. Confront whatever was between them now and hope they could have an adult conversation? Or did she just go back to trying her damnedest to ignore it all? If only. Seraphine's heart was beating so fast that she feared Renata might hear it from the hallway as she stepped out of the elevator, with her guards leaving her to her own devices as she started toward the double doors of Renata's rooms. The floor guards likewise ignored her, as they always did now. Renata had given strict orders that she was to be allowed the freedom to move between her own room, Renata's master suite, and Renata's personal office floors, which was quite a lot better than being confined to her quarters. She rapped her knuckles on the door and waited for the muffled
"Enter,"
before opening them a crack to step inside and closing the doors behind her. As always, the room was dimly lit. Renata's chem-hansed eyes could pierce the darkness far more easily than Seraphine's, but she had started to get used to the crepuscular nature of the city and moved quietly towards the study, which had a single, dull chemical lamp lit, illuminating the sole occupant of the room. Renata was unmasked and dressed in a simple linen tunic, and her desk was covered in a variety of papers, all neatly arranged in a fan in front of her. She had paused in her writing, the stylus still clutched between her fingers as Seraphine entered. And Renata looked up and said,
"How was the chem lord?"
"No worse, but no better, I don't think," Seraphine replied.
"You think?"
"I'm not a doctor,"
Seraphine said pointedly.
"But the fact that she isn't getting any worse is good, I think."
She continued to close the distance as she spoke.
"It means that she's healing. I think that Jinx would recover from anything that doesn't kill her outright."
Renata made a quiet noise of assent as Seraphine stopped at her side and casually pulled the chair that Renata was sitting in out a little to make room for her in her lap. Seraphine sat down without a word, then relaxed against Renata's chest, resting her head on the older woman's shoulder. And Renata seemed to hesitate at the sudden show of warmth before settling her hand on Seraphine's hip.
"And how was the drive?" Renata asked.
"Fine," Seraphine replied. There's nothing between here and Billowa, you know that.
Nothing so far, Renata chided her. It's not as though Camille Pharos will alert us to the fact that she has become aware of the tunnel complex's pathways when it inevitably happens, kitten. This was where Seraphine would normally argue, despite the sound logic of Renata's statement. After her conversation with Lux and her new and quiet willingness to accept the feelings that had sprung up between them, Seraphine decided also to accept the statement not as a criticism, but as the very awkward manner in which Renata showed her concern. In the end, all she was really saying was that she was worried about Seraphine's safety, and that was sweet, even if it could be a bit overbearing at times. So instead, Seraphine simply nodded and said,
I know, I'll be careful, okay? I promise.
The scratching of Renata's stylus came to a halt, but her fingers that were resting on Seraphine's hips curled inward just a little as she said,
I would appreciate that.
Seraphine nodded silently and curled up a little closer, and smiled faintly as she felt Renata tip her head slightly to bring it to rest against Seraphine's. It was a silent and gentle show of affection, which Seraphine accepted without comment or complaint. She could feel the tension leaving Renata as well. She became marginally more relaxed as the minutes wore into an hour, and Seraphine remained where she was until finally Renata set down her stylus, pushed the paper away, and said,
You're being especially compliant tonight.
I'm just tired, Seraphine said quietly, and she wasn't lying. She'd had a somewhat emotionally trying day. It was hard seeing Jinx like that, and even harder seeing Lux struggle to stay optimistic, insanity notwithstanding. Just being around people could be tiring for her lately.
You have a bed, Renata said wryly.
I know, Seraphine replied, not rising to the bait. Then she turned in place, wrapped her arms around Renata, and pressed her face into the crook of the woman's neck.
I just missed you, that's all.
Before Renata could spit some witty rejoinder, Seraphine lifted her head just enough to press a kiss to Renata's cheek before returning to where she had been, and she practically heard the breath catch in Renata's throat. A moment later, she swallowed audibly, and the next breath she dragged in was faintly ragged.
What are you doing? Renata asked after a long moment.
Being honest, Seraphine said before sighing, adjusting herself in Renata's lap, then propping herself up until she was looking into those chem-scorched eyes and saying,
I want to ask you something.
And I need you to be completely honest with me, please.
I have never been anything but honest with you, Renata said pointedly. Do you love me?
By the look on Renata's face, it might have been less damaging if Seraphine had picked up the abandoned stylus and jammed it into the older woman's throat. Her eyes were wide, and the lines around them were carven starkly from strain as she opened her mouth once, twice, then three times in an attempt to answer, but failed to make any noise at all. Seraphine watched and heard a cavalcade of emotions happen behind Renata's eyes. Fury, pain, hatred, pure animal terror. Renata's soul had always been an orchestral thing, but now it was in disarray. There was confusion in the ranks and chaos spreading section by section. So Seraphine asked again, but not with her voice. This time she asked with her lips as she closed the distance and pressed her mouth to Renata's in a clumsy, frozen kiss, and waited. A second of hesitation felt like the journey of 1,000 years. But at its end, Seraphine felt Renata soften, and she felt those strong hands, one warm, the other cold and metal, come rest on her shoulders as full lips meshed almost uncertainly against her own. Seraphine settled into Renata's lap more fully, her legs bracketing Renata's hips. She dug her fingers into the coarse linen of Renata's tunic and wondered briefly why she was wearing it when she owned so much silk. The question dissolved as Renata laid a hand on Seraphine's cheek and drew her closer, deepening the kiss. And unprompted, Seraphine opened her mouth slowly. There was something desperate in the way Renata kissed her, as if she had been holding her breath for such a long time and had only just been given permission to breathe. Seraphine, in a way, felt the same. That had been the point, though, to ensure that Renata knew that Seraphine felt the same. When they parted, Seraphine watched as a shadow crossed over Renata's face, and she reached up to trace her fingers over the lines of sharp cheekbones as she said,
"Tell me the truth, please. You've never lied, so please just tell me the truth."
"What truth would you take from me?" Renata bit out as she closed her eyes. "How much more of me do you think I have to give?"
"I don't want to take anything from you, Renata," Seraphine promised.
"Then what do you want?"
"Just this," Seraphine replied. Then leaned in and kissed her again, softly this time, and more gently. Then pulled back and said, "I don't want to hurt you, Renata. I would never hurt you." And just like that, Renata suddenly seemed horribly tired, as if all the weight she carried day in and day out had suddenly crashed down upon her and dragged her headlong into the sump. Seraphine's heart nearly broke at the onslaught of weariness that sang out like a mourning dirge from Renata's soul. It was the kind of weariness that could drag someone down into a darkness that there would be no returning from. A death of the heart. Seraphine brushed her hands gently over Renata's strained features and said, "Please, please just trust me, okay?"
She leaned in and brushed her lips fleetingly over Renata's, then drew back and said,
"I know that's asking a lot. And I know that you've lived a long life expecting to be hurt and being proven right, but I am begging you," Seraphine pleaded, "to trust that I would never, ever hurt you, I promise."
For the first time ever, Seraphine watched a few hot, painful tears fall from Renata's eyes, and she clenched her eyes shut.
"Do not promise a Zonite something like that, kitten," she said through a tight, closed throat. "You know not what you promise."
It took Seraphine a moment to recognize what it was that Renata was saying. And when she did, her heart leapt into her throat. A Zonite promise, of course. To promise something so intimate in Zon was the closest thing to a vow of matrimony that they had. She had overstepped, but had she? Her life was already signed away in ink and blood and in triplicate, no less. In that moment, Seraphine thought that it was a rare thing to know when you stood at a precipice. Usually it was something only recognized in hindsight, and only with a deep and sinking feeling that you had done it quite wrong. This time, though, she could see the abyss before her. She could feel the depth of it and the darkness, and she knew that what sprawled out before her was shrouded. To leap? Or no?
"What if I do know?"
Seraphine asked. And Renata's eyes snapped open.
"You know nothing," Renata rasped
I am wretched and broken, and all that is left in me is death, girl. I have nothing to offer you.
How many times do I have to say it?
Seraphine whispered back as she leaned in until their lips were barely separated by the width of a blade's edge.
I don't want to take anything from you.
Then why?
She asked, her voice actually shaking.
Because sometimes love is just finding someone with matching scars,
Seraphine replied, then said.
Because now I know you'll never hurt me either.
Seraphine had never felt Renata shake before. Not like she did right then. A tremor ran through the older woman's whole body as she slowly brought both arms around Seraphine's back and clutched tight before leaning in. This time it was Renata who brought herself to rest against the narrow crook of Seraphine's neck. The young singer, who had lost and given so much, brought one thin arm to rest against Renata's back. And she laid her other hand on the back of Renata's head as she gently stroked the long river of ink and iron. She heard something inside the soul of Renata Glask break and spill out with a mournful cry. And at that moment she felt the trickle of hot tears against her neck.
It's okay,
Seraphine hushed as she stroked Renata's hair.
You've lost so much, and had your heart killed so often, and it wasn't fair.
She leaned her cheek more heavily against Renata's head.
None of it was fair, and you were just a girl, and it wasn't your fault.
How long they stayed like that, Seraphine wasn't certain. She knew that her shoulder had gotten quite damp by the end. But when Renata finally did pull away, there was almost no sign of it. Nothing but a faint redness around the edges of her eyes that might have just as easily been attributed to exhaustion. And she did look exhausted.
Come on.
Seraphine freed herself and stood up with her hand out.
You need to sleep.
Renata looked down at the myriad papers on her desk for several seconds. And Seraphine could almost feel the usual excuse of too much work rising on her lips. But Renata surprised her yet again by nodding, taking Seraphine's hand and levering herself up. She trudged out of the study and towards the master bedroom, rolling up the left sleeve of her tunic as she did. When she got to the bed, she collapsed onto it. And without waiting for permission, Seraphine moved to her left side and began unfastening Renata's prosthetic. Neither said a word about it. Renata simply allowed her to do it as if she had expected it. With the arm removed and set aside, Seraphine began the process of cleaning the port of stray chemicals before fitting the port cover over it with a dull, mechanical click.
Thank you, Renata said.
And for once the words lacked any trace of her usual acerbic humor. Renata sat silently at the side of the bed, taking long, deep breaths for almost a full minute. And Seraphine remained unmoving. Eventually, something in Renata seemed to give out. And she nodded to the unspoken question that had come up between them. She pulled the tunic over her head, doffed her trousers. And as she did that, Seraphine stood up and began undressing. Her skirts and blouse fell in a silken pool on the floor at the foot of the bed, followed by her underthings. Then she turned and crawled up to the head of the bed and slipped beneath the sheets. Again, Renata surprised her, because she didn't look. She was naked and her scarred back was bare to Seraphine's eyes. And she was suddenly reminded of Renata's story, of the smelting foundries of Balbach, of quotas and whippings. It sickened her that Piltover pretended that the cruelties of Zahn were of its own devising, and not learned from the hands of its one-time master. Chuckling softly, Seraphine pulled the covers back a little and said, "Come to bed. It's okay." Renata nodded without looking back and slid in beside her. It was awkward because of the metal port. In the end, Seraphine ended up shuffling over Renata and settling in on her right side rather than her left, and finally relaxed into the crook of her arm and let out a small, delighted hum as Renata's fingers traced a line up from her thigh, over the swell of her hip, down past her waist, up along her ribs, and then back. She did that again and again, and Seraphine decided she liked it.
"Is this okay?"
Seraphine asked finally. She didn't really believe they would have gotten this far if Renata didn't want to be there. She was too stubborn of a woman for that, even if she did have a certain soft spot. "I know that I won't make you happy," Renata replied, then said, "So forgive me if I'm not certain how to answer that, kitten." Seraphine laid a hand over Renata's stomach and said, "These aren't happy times, and I don't expect miracles. But I'm already happy enough, and with you, I..." She trailed off, then decided to bite the bullet and finish her thought. "I feel safe." She felt Renata take in a deep breath, watched that broad chest rise and fall with it, and quirked her lips up in a small smile as Renata turned onto her side to face her and take her cheek in one hand. "I wish you had found someone better." She leaned in and touched her forehead to Seraphine's. "Someone softer, who would not take your best years from you."
"My years are mine to give,"
Seraphine replied stoically, then laughed quietly and said,
"Besides, who says these are my best years? I think I'll age very gracefully, don't you?"
To her surprise, Renata shared that quiet laugh, then nodded. And Seraphine wondered at the face she was seeing all of a sudden. This more tender and human Renata Glask. Maybe it was a shadow of the woman she might have been if she had been given the chance. How much had been stolen by Piltover's greed? Jinx's mind, Echo's future, Renata's kindness. All stolen and ground up, and for what? Coin? What a miserable trade. "I'll give you as many of my years as you want if you want them," Seraphine said finally. "You could do so much better," Renata countered.
"Maybe," Renata said. "Or maybe I've done it just right."
Renata closed her eyes then and took another deep breath, then opened them, and Seraphine felt speared by that gaze. There was a new intensity to it, and she felt as she had the first time she'd locked eyes with Renata Glask. Like she was being laid bare. When Renata spoke, it was in richly accented Gutlau. And Seraphine listened for the words and the meaning hidden within the secret syllables. She heard of soft touches and long embraces, safe harbors and warm hearths. She heard promises of unlocked doors and a place to rest ere she was weary. She heard Renata say,
I will never hurt you.
The text of this story is available on AO3. Music by Dot Matrix. If you would like me to record a story, voice over a character, get in touch using the contact information available on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as a link to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.